Welcome to the Natural Health 365 podcast, natural solutions for everyday problems. Are you looking for natural health solutions? Visit naturalhealth365.com for a free subscription to our newsletter, free shows, plus some great gifts. And now, here's your host, Jonathan Landsman.
All right, thank you so much for joining us. Our show today, Raw Milk, the Uncensored Truth Exposed. Millions of Americans are hearing about raw milk's growing popularity, but they are uncertain if raw milk is safe for them or not. They are confused for good reason. On one hand, you have a team of top European researchers concluding that raw milk is associated with a reduced risk of childhood asthma and allergies compared to pasteurized milk. And yet you have the CDC on their raw milk food safety pages arguing there is no health benefits from drinking raw milk that cannot be obtained from drinking pasteurized milk that is free of disease-causing bacteria. How could such high-level scientific sources come to such an opposite conclusion about such a basic food? Our guest today will answer that question plus much more about raw milk. This is important health information you'll never get on any mainstream media outlet. According to a recent guest of mine, prolific author and celebrity Beyond Organic farmer Joel Salatin, said our guest churns out every answer to every conceivable question in the raw milk controversy. But before we get to our special guest, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. And now, please join me in welcoming the author of three books concerning raw milk, including the Raw Milk Answer book, David Gumpert. David, welcome.
Well, thank you, Jonathan. Good to be here.
David, why is there so much interest in raw milk these days? And do we know exactly what the numbers are? How many people are actually enjoying raw milk?
Well, the answer to your first question, the interest in raw milk is part and parcel of the growing amount of interest in natural food, organic food, locally produced food, nutrient-dense food. But raw milk, for any number of reasons, seems to raise more controversy than other foods like good meat or good vegetables or good fruits or nuts or whatever. It's a very controversial subject and has been for an awful long time and seems likely to continue in that vein for the foreseeable future.
Well, David, you know, for sure, my opinion, I'm not looking to try to convince anybody as to what kind of foods to eat, but I'm with you in terms of it seems like conventional news always has an opinion to let us all know that we shouldn't be concerned about chemicals, we shouldn't be concerned about artificially produced food, we should just relax and eat all of these things. But the movement is definitely there. People are waking up to the fact that it is just absurd what they keep telling us about, you know, certain things not being an issue at all. GMOs, we shouldn't be worried about. Artificial sweeteners, we shouldn't be worried about. Oh, it's so silly. On and on and on. Same thing with raw milk. So, again, do we know how many people are actually enjoying the raw milk? And also, I'd like you to talk a little bit about the difference between pre-pasteurized and fresh milk. This is important stuff.
We don't know exactly how many people are drinking raw milk. Part of the reason we don't has to do with the fact that the powers that be, the federal government agencies and the state agencies, really don't want us to know too much about it. The CDC did some research back in 2007-2008 where they included raw milk as one of a number of foods they were trying to obtain information about in terms of how much people were consuming and how many people were consuming. They did this survey in 10 states asking them about a whole long list of foods. And when it came to raw milk, something on the order of 3% of the people who responded said they were drinking raw milk. Now, this was a well-done survey because it was done by professional researchers and survey people. And if you translate that nationally, you get something like 10 million people. 3% of 300 million people is about 10 million people. And that's way over what advocates of raw milk even had suggested they thought it was more on the order of about 1%. There hasn't been any other research, and so you have to assume that the number, whatever it is continues to go up because raw milk grows in popularity as more people learn about it and become and try it and often find out that it has health benefits for them or members of their family. So it's somewhere in that 1% to 3% of the population.
So get right into this idea of pre-pasteurized versus fresh milk. Help us understand
it. Yeah, pre-pasteurized versus fresh milk is an interesting distinction to make, and it's an important distinction to make because there's a tendency for people to hear the term raw milk and think, well, that's, you know, any milk that isn't pasteurized is raw milk. And technically, that's true. But if you think about it a little more carefully, you realize that the milk that's unpasteurized but is produced by conventional farms, in other words, milk that's intended to be pasteurized, is a lot different from milk that is produced by dairies that intend to sell it and distribute it raw. And the reason is that milk that's produced by conventional farms, where they know it's going to be pasteurized, they know that they have some latitude in terms of sanitation and safety. They know that they can get away with certain things, as it were, because that milk is going to be zapped. It's going to be heated to 165 degrees, and that will kill off any potentially dangerous bacteria. The raw dairy farmers who are distributing the milk directly to consumers don't have that latitude, and so they tend to use much more stringent sanitation and safety procedures. They also tend to raise their animals differently than the conventional dairies, so you're getting usually milk from cows that have been fed grass. They've been on pasture, as opposed to conventional dairies, where the cows have been in feedlots and just fed grains.
David, I think this is a very important point to talk about for another couple minutes. Again, people are waking up to the idea of where does my food come from? And more importantly than the city and the state, but where in terms of how it's being raised, what's the nature of what goes into that food that I then put into my body? So along those lines, David, talk about, do the cows that eat grass, as you just mentioned, instead of grain, are they actually producing a milk that's safe for the drink? Talk about that, please.
Yeah, I'd say that the general feeling, and this comes from the limited research that's been done, that cows that are raised on grass are producing milk that isn't necessarily safer, but they're producing milk that is has a more favorable nutritional makeup. In other words, it has better quality fats. It has more conjugated linoleic acid and other nutrients that are beneficial. Now I think it's worth pointing out, there has been assumptions that cows that are raised on pasture are not going to be able to produce milk that is has pathogens. In other words, the pastured milk, the good bacteria somehow overwhelm the bad bacteria that might be in the milk. And I wouldn't call that an old wives' tale, but it was certainly a lot of people that word kind of got around a few years back because of some very limited research that suggested it. But it's been shown in a number of situations to not be the case. In other words, milk that comes from grass-fed cows has, on a few occasions, been shown to contain pathogens. And what that says is really that the farmers who are producing that milk can't just rely on the fact that it's that their cows are grass-fed to ensure safety. They have to take other steps to make sure that that the cows are healthy and that their barns and their milk rooms are sanitized so that the milk is truly safe.
So, David, like you said earlier on, and we talked about this already for a moment, public health warnings are really clear. I mean, you turn on conventional television sets, and it's like they're just scaring people all the time whenever they get a chance to stay away from anything natural because it, you know, it can't possibly be safe. So why isn't that scaring people away? What's your take on that?
Well, I think that they're trying to promote the pasteurized milk. I mean, you have the large corporate dairy interests, which have a lot at stake by keeping consumers not only preferring pasteurized milk, but being afraid of raw milk. And I think that's a big part of it. It's financially, economically driven, the fear-mongering that goes on. And the reality is that dairies that are producing raw milk need to pay real close attention to safety and sanitation, and because what happens is that if people do get sick, because there are these interests out there, as you say, that are trying to scare people about not only raw milk but about natural foods in general, they'll use every excuse and every incident they can to try to scare people off. So it's incumbent on the raw dairy producers to not have any slip-ups, not have any screw-ups. Now, that's the best thing they can do to counter those claims.
So in shifting gears for a moment, let's not leave out raw milk cheese. Would you say it's as controversial as the fluid raw milk?
Raw milk cheese is a special kind of a category. And the reason it is that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration essentially sanctioned raw milk cheese back in the late 1940s. And what they did was they said, you know, raw milk cheese is legal and okay as long as it's aged for 60 days. And that requirement has held since the late 1940s. Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't controversy around raw milk cheese, because as the dairy interests have become more aggressive, they've wanted to not only stamp out fluid raw milk, but they want to stamp out raw milk cheese. And over the last 10 years, there's been a campaign pushed by the FDA to try to somehow tamper with that 60-day rule, that 60-day aging rule, and possibly make it longer or eliminate it entirely and ban raw milk cheese. And they've had a number of initiatives, a number of studies underway over the last decade to try to undermine the credibility of raw milk cheese. So far, it hasn't worked. The reason being that people don't get sick from raw milk cheese. I mean, raw milk cheese turns out to be, in practice, and based on the data, safer even than fluid raw milk. That 60-day aging, I'm not sure that is the sole reason, but whatever the reason, raw milk cheese, and this isn't just in the U.S., but internationally, raw milk cheese causes very few illnesses. In fact, the FDA undertook a study about 3 or 4 years ago trying to come up with data that would undermine the credibility of raw milk cheese. And they could really, when you looked at the research, they were only able to come up with a handful of illnesses based on a worldwide search. In other words, there were just, I'm going to say, 4 or 5 or 6 cases of illness involving raw milk cheese all over the world over a multi-year period. And so they keep hacking at it. They keep trying to undermine raw milk cheese, and they're not finished with it. They've got a study ongoing even as we speak. But so far, it's held up, and raw milk cheese makers who are increasing in numbers very rapidly have organized and are objecting to this kind of effort to undermine them, and wild goose chase, you might call it, and witch hunt, whatever you want to call it. And so far, they've held off the FDA, but it's another area of controversy.
I want to thank our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. You know, David, when we're talking about this whole idea of whether something is safe or not, I just want to give people a heads up. I mean, certainly a lot of people listening to this program, they get it already, but they're sharing it with a lot of people that are new to this kind of information. And the bottom line is, it's so clear to me in doing this for nearly 30 years that there is such a dangerous trend going on out there in terms of what conventional news puts out. You know, they'll put out somebody with a PhD or a medical license, and that most people have no idea when they listen to them all over the United States, especially in all these different news broadcasts. They're put out as experts on health, and they have no idea that these people are funded, supported by major industries. I mean, this whole idea of homogenization, right? See, tell me if I have this wrong or not. Wasn't it like some idea that, wow, if you had that fat floating on the top of milk, it was like something that was really viewed as really, really great to have, and the dairy industry was like, enough with this already. This is too difficult for other companies to keep up with this. So they came up with this idea of blending it all together so it all looks the same, and then people wouldn't be able to see the difference. I mean, isn't that something about the way this whole thing was created to begin with?
Yeah, homogenization kind of came up as in the 1930s as a follow-on to pasteurization, which kind of took hold in the began taking hold in the 19-teens and 20s. It came about, like as you suggest, partly as a way to sell more milk, but partly to change the appearance. I mean, raw milk, when it sits for a few hours, you can see the cream form on the top, and they didn't want this milk sitting in grocery store shelves and people seeing that the cream had risen to the top and wondering, gee, how long has that milk been sitting there? And so they kind of came up with this idea, well, we'll homogenize it and we'll tell people this is really better because it's more modern. And so they kind of launched this campaign that homogenized milk is the more modern choice. But as you suggest also, homogenization actually changes the composition of the milk, and it changes the size of the fat globules into even size so that they won't float to the top. And but in doing that, there's some thinking that they really make the fat less nutritionally available and less nutritionally positive for us than if it's unhomogenized. So I always suggest to people that even if they want to drink pasteurized milk, they should try to find it unhomogenized. And you can now. More dairies, or small dairies especially, that produce pasteurized milk will leave it unhomogenized. So people who are more risk-averse and want their milk pasteurized can at least have it unhomogenized.
And what about the medical community? I mean, give us a little bit of a history lesson. Did they initially resist pasteurization? And if so, why?
Well, you know, raw milk has a kind of an unfortunate history. You know, it was produced for really thousands of years before the mid 1800s, late 1800s, when people began moving to the cities, and we had this unfortunate period in the late 1800s, early 1900s, when a lot of milk was being produced by unreputable producers who had moved to the city and were interested in producing it in quantity. They didn't understand the limits of sanitation. They didn't understand the necessity for refrigeration. And they didn't understand the difference between pathogens and good bacteria, because those things just weren't known yet. And so you had some very serious outbreaks of illness, of typhoid and tuberculosis, brucellosis in the late 1800s, early 1900s in our biggest cities. And so the medical community had always viewed raw milk as nutritionally superior to many other foods. And indeed, raw milk was often prescribed by doctors as a cure for chronic disease or for serious disease like tuberculosis. And at tuberculosis sanitariums, people would be put on, and in some cases, be put on an exclusive raw milk diet as a way to counter the disease. And the original Mayo Clinic was often specialized in using raw milk. So you had this, and there were books being written by doctors about the benefits of a raw milk diet. This gradually changed as first a number of big cities adopted pasteurization as a way to counter these disease outbreaks. And pasteurization was effective in this large sense, in this encountering these large outbreaks. But what they didn't, people didn't realize, and the medical community included, was that the composition and the nutritional benefits of milk were possibly being affected by the pasteurization. And so the medical community and the public health community gradually changed their view, and this, the schools where they were taught changed their teaching about raw milk and about the benefits of pasteurization. And so today's doctors and today's public health people and others in the medical community and the health community tend to be very negative on raw milk because of this move toward pasteurization that developed over the last 100 years.
I don't know, David. For me, it just sounds kind of gross, the whole idea of pasteurizing milk. You know, oh, we're going to kill off anything that's going to hurt you. But, you know, in my mind, the way I think about it, killing off all of that at high temperature and it's just sort of floating around the milk and then you suck that down, you're drinking it. I mean, it sounds kind of gross to me. But I want you to talk a little bit more for a couple minutes that we have time for about the bacteria that are in fresh milk. And what about the risk of illness from raw milk compared to other foods? Talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah, there's a lot of disagreement there as well as to just what is the risk of illness from raw milk. The CDC and the FDA say that raw milk is inherently unsafe. And when they say inherently unsafe, they mean that there's no way it can be produced safely. In other words, it's prone to having pathogens in it no matter what precautions the producers take. And but yet there are people, hundreds of thousands, even millions of people each day consuming raw milk and not getting sick. And it's very difficult to get hard data about the number of illnesses because the CDC data, not only on raw milk, but on all foods and the number of illnesses is very difficult to extract. They have an antiquated system of data on this. But I've gone through the data and for a few years, 2010, 2011, and a few other people have gone through it to a similar extent. And what you find is when you look at that, the raw data, as it were, you find that there are generally, over the last 10 years, a range of between 50 and 150 illnesses each year from raw milk. Now, okay, what does that mean? Because you know, you can, is that a lot or is that a few? Or, and the way it, to me, the way to assess it is to look at the number of illnesses overall from all foods. And it turns out that the number of reported illnesses in the U.S. from all foods is in the area of 15,000. So what we're looking at is something in the neighborhood of 1% or less of the total number of illnesses from bad food in the U.S. coming from raw milk. As you recall, we talked a little earlier about how something on the order of 1% to 3% of people in the U.S. are consuming raw milk. So those illnesses don't seem out of line with the what we know to be the consumption of raw milk. I always tell people that, you know, who are, you know, say, well, how safe is raw milk? And I think it's a matter of personal decisions, personal style. You have to really decide what your risk tolerance is. And for some people, just one or two illnesses is enough to can scare them away. And I say, well, that's your choice. That's your decision. For other people, it's more the fact that there are a few illnesses is less important compared to the potential health benefits they stand to gain from consuming raw milk. So that's why I tend to take the view that I'm not necessarily advocating that people drink raw milk, but I am very strongly supportive of the fact that people should have the right to make that decision themselves and not have it made by the government or others.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And David, as far as I'm concerned, it seems so clear that when the government wants to apply their safety concerns about things and they restrict people, make it difficult for people, or even just flat out prevent and ban people from being able to get all sorts of healthy products. And they really are quite healthy. They seem to always be overly concerned about safety. But then when you look at something like vaccines, where over $200 million are paid out in a kangaroo court, meaning that they barely let anyone get away with actually being able to prove that a vaccine has injured them or caused premature, untimely death. They're paying out over $200 million a year, year after year, billions of dollars already in a fund and in a court system that most people never hear about, and yet they'll continue to say vaccines are safe and effective. I mean, if you applied that kind of logic to raw milk, I mean, every raw milk producer would be jailed by now and there would be zero raw milk available. So to me, I don't trust anything that the government is now saying about what is safe and what's not. It seems to all be motivated by profit and by supporting only large corporations that basically are running all the rules that we're seeing played out in conventional news. I want to thank our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. David, I'm curious about something. This is a very interesting question I have for you about many of the raw milk drinkers that we have out there that seem to be refraining from sharing this information about, you know, what they do, their habits, with their healthcare provider. Why do you suppose something like that would be going on?
Well, I advise people to not share the fact that they're feeding raw milk, say, to their kids with their pediatrician. And the reason is that pediatricians, as I said before, like other healthcare professionals, tend to be very much against raw milk and against feeding it to your family. And so what's happened in a few instances is that when doctors, pediatricians have been told that they're kids are drinking raw milk, they've actually gone to the welfare authorities and reported families, reported parents for serving raw milk as endangering their kids or abusing their kids. And so we had one case like that up in Maine where a mother had told her pediatrician that she was feeding her son a formula based on raw goat's milk, and that pediatrician went to the public officials and the child welfare officials, and there was a big to-do about it. There was a huge protest as a result by ordinary citizens, and the medical people backed off, and the public welfare people backed off. But suggest that people avoid it, because better to be safe than sorry. In other words, don't bring up something that's going to be potentially arouse either criticism or arouse anger or resentment in the healthcare provider. Keep things peaceful and just don't go there.
Very good advice, David. And finally, as we close out the program, why can raw milk be sold legally from unregulated dairies?
Why should it be sold, or how can it be sold?
Well, how can it be sold?
Yeah, we have this crazy quilt system of regulation of raw milk in the U.S. Each state is responsible for regulating raw milk and how it's made available. And we have 50 states, and we really have 50 sets of regulations. Roughly speaking, in 10 states, raw milk can be sold retail. In 20 states, it can be sold direct from the farm if the farm has a permit. And in 20 states, it's illegal to sell raw milk, either from the farm or retail. And in those 20 states, about 8 or 10 of them now have adopted regulations in some states, or they've adopted legislation in some states that allow private sale of raw milk through private arrangements known as herd shares or cow shares, where groups of people can gain access to raw milk as the only way in those states. So states like Ohio and Virginia and Michigan have now, and Colorado, have sanctioned these private arrangements. So that's a way to obtain raw milk in states where it's otherwise illegal.
David, I want to thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate all of your efforts in educating people out there.
Well, it's my pleasure, and thank you for the great questions.
The show was brought to you by NaturalHealth365.com. Are you looking for natural health solutions? Visit NaturalHealth365.com for a free subscription to our newsletter, free shows, plus some great gifts. Thank you for listening, and be sure to join us next week for another great show.